Canto 12, Chapter 6, Maharaj Parikshit passes away, text number 51. Tasam sa chaturaha shishyan upahuya mahamati ekaikam samhitam brahman ekaikasmai dadau vibhu tasamsa chatura shishyan upahuya mahamati ekaikam samhitam brahman ekaikasmai dadau vibhu. Of those four collections, Saha, He, Chaturaha, four, Shishyan, disciples, Upahuya, calling near, Mahamati, the powerfully intelligent sage, Eka Ekam, one by one, Samhitam, a collection, Brahman, O Brahmana, Eka Ekasmai, to teach to each of them. Dadau, he gave, Vibhu, the powerful Vyasadev. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The most powerful and intelligent Vyasadev called four of his disciples, O Brahmana, and entrusted to each one of them, one of these four samhitas. Translation responsively. The most powerful and intelligent Vyasadev called four of his disciples, O Brahmana, and entrusted to each of them one of these four samhitas. There is no purport, I'll continue forward. Text 52-53. Srila Vyasadeva taught the first Samhita, the Rig Veda, to Paila and gave this collection the name Bhavricha. To the sage Vaishampayana, he spoke the collection of Yajur Mantras named Nigada. He taught the Sama Veda Mantras, designated as the Chandoga Samhita, to Jaimini, and he spoke the Atharva Veda to his dear disciple Sumantu. Text 54-56. After dividing the Samhita into two parts, the wise Paila spoke it to Indra Pramiti and Bhashkala. Bhashkala further divided his collection into four parts, O Bhargav, and instructed them to his disciples Bodhya, Yajna Valkya, Parashar and Agnimitra. Indra Pramiti, the self-controlled sage, taught his Samhita to the learned mystic Mandukya, whose disciple Devamrit later passed down the divisions of the Rig Veda to Saubhari and others. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Mandukya was the son of Indra Pramiti, from whom he received Vedic knowledge. Om Ajnanatina Nandasya Jnananjana Shilakya Chakshununutam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garudha Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Text 51. The most powerful and intelligent Vyasadev called four of his disciples, O Brahmana, and entrusted to each of them one of these four samhitas. So in this verse we can see how the Vedas were put down into writing. So before, when people's memory and intelligence was very sharp, they could actually remember the knowledge, or remember the Vedic knowledge, or even any kind of knowledge. So Vyasadeva, he could foresee the condition, the future of Kali Yuga. He could foresee the conditions of Kali Yuga as it is described in the first canto. O learned men, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, and always disturbed. Manda sumanda upayo. So, in this age of Kali, because the conditions are such that people are always disturbed. So people are always very. It is mentioned that they are lazy. So they are lazy. Just doesn't mean they are materially lazy. You see, in this day and age, people are actually quite lazy. Even they are lazy for material things. But actually, there the word lazy, what it means is that they are lazy about their spiritual development. So in this iron age of Kali, men are but lazy. People's lives are very short. So as by the passing of Kali Yuga, day by day, we see people's lives are actually reducing. So because of so many factors, the food, the environment, but ultimately all of this is brought about by time. So people's lives are short. People are very, very quarrelsome. Over small issues, people make a big thing and they fight. We see so many wars are taking place all over the world. They are actually over very, very petty issues. So people are quarrelsome. The other day, I was driving, and then one person just got so angry because I was driving a bit too close to him. So he just stopped the car and got out and started shouting at me. So we can see people are very, very quarrelsome over very, very small issues. People are lazy, quarrelsome. They are always disturbed. So just by residing in this day and age of Kali, one will be disturbed. There are so many distractions. And Prabhupada mentions there's cinemas. People are disturbed by the social environment. People are being harassed by so many taxes. They are disturbed. They're disturbed in their family situation. So in every aspect of life, people are disturbed. The environment is such, you walk down the street, one's mind will get agitated. So in such a situation, it is actually very difficult to cultivate spiritual life. And Srila Vyasadeva could foresee all of this, and therefore he divided the one Veda into four. So originally the Veda was not in written form. So we know Krishna, he spoke it to Lord Brahma in his heart. So when the universe was created, when the primary creation took place, then Mahavishnu, there was Mahavishnu, and then from Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu comes. And then from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, this stem grows from his navel, and there's a lotus flower. And on top of that, Brahma was born. So therefore, Brahma doesn't have any material father. His father is Vishnu. So when Brahma took birth, he was perplexed that he wanted to know about his origin. So he looked around, he could not figure out where he appeared from, and everything was very dark. So he went down this stem and he was looking in the depths of the causal ocean, but still he couldn't find his origin. And then he heard these words, tapa, austerity. So he engaged in austerity for a very long period of time. And then he was enlightened from within the heart. And then Lord Brahma, he expanded on the Chaturshloki of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he expanded on that, and that's the Bhagavatam as we know of. So then Brahma spoke to Narad, and then Narad spoke to Vyasadeva. So in this way, the disciplic succession is coming down. But Lord Brahma was inspired from within the heart. So it is described that one can be enlightened from within and without. So we see in Lord Brahma's case, he was enlightened from within. And then he spoke this to Narada, and Narada spoke this to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva could actually foresee the conditions of Kali Yuga. Therefore, he divided the one Veda into four. So it is described that how he divided the four into four Vedas, the Rig, the Sama, Yajur and Atharva. And then he also compiled the Mahabharata. Because he knew that most people, they won't have the ability to understand the Vedas. Because even if you just look at the Sanskrit of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is actually very, very tough. And what to speak of the Sanskrit in the Vedas. So, you know, and one cannot, so it is very hard to understand it. And, you know, and the Vedas are very vast. And there are actually hundreds and thousands of verses in the Vedas. And then on top of that, the Vedas talk about the Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda, and Bhakti Yoga also. So one can easily get lost in the Vedas. It is very difficult to know what the purpose of the Vedas is. So, and then one needs someone who knows what the purpose of the Vedas is. And that is very rare to find in this day and age. In terms of course, we have our spiritual masters who know the purpose of the Vedas. But for someone to teach the Vedas, it is very, very hard. It's hard to find a qualified person who can make you understand the Vedas. So he could foresee all of this. And after even compiling the Vedas and the Mahabharata, he was actually not satisfied in heart. Vyasadeva was not satisfied. So then he was wondering why he was not satisfied. He engaged in a welfare activity in which he compiled the one Veda into four. And here in these verses we can see how he did that. He entrusted the four Samhitas to four of his dear disciples, and they further, you know, they subdivided it, and in that way they compiled it. But even after doing all of this, Vyasadeva was not satisfied in heart. So then as a nice disciple, he approached his spiritual master, Narad Muni. Actually, Narad Muni came to visit him at that time. So then Narad Muni inquired into the cause of his despondency. And then Vyasadeva described what he did. And he said, maybe I haven't sufficiently glorified the pastimes of the Lord and the devotees. And then Narad Muni said, yes, that is correct. Because you haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna and his devotees, you're not actually satisfied in heart. Though he compiled the four Vedas. So we see the Vedas deal with all aspects of life. So the Vedas deal with our material situation as well as our spiritual situation. So they deal with our... So therefore it encompasses everything. Because our true identity is the spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, but we have this material body. So the material body also has to be looked after. The material body has its needs. So in the Vedic civilization, both are actually taken care of. And of course, the more important is the spirit soul. So there are the needs of the body, and then there's the needs of the Atma. So the need of the Atma is to render service to Krishna as part and parcel, to render devotional service to Krishna, and to engage in the nine items of devotional service and sadhana bhakti. But at the same time, we have this body. So the body has to be looked after. So therefore, the Vedas are... You know, the Vedas include everything. So there's Ayurveda, there's astrology, there is military science, you name it. All the sciences are there. So that one can... The whole idea is that one can live a progressive life. So in modern society we see that they are only trying to look after the needs of the body, without taking into account the spiritual element or the spirit soul, because they don't even know what our real identity is. So what to speak of looking after it. So there's so much ignorance that people in this day and age, they reject God or they say there is no God. That this creation, material nature, is actually independent and it is working on its own. So material nature is the cause and it has so many effects. And material nature is working independently of anyone. So they reject, and because they reject the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Consciousness, and therefore they think there's no soul also. So they are only thinking that we are this body. So this is the gross ignorance in this day and age. So then, because they're only focusing on the needs of the body, independent of the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means independent of the authority of the Vedas, therefore they don't know even how to look after the body properly. Because the Vedas are like the manual for mankind in how to live a very progressive life. So just like when we buy a product comes with a manual. And when you, if you take the time to read the manual, we will know how to operate that product in a very efficient manner. But if we don't read the manual, then we can still use the product to some degree, or we can actually end up causing harm. We can cause harm to ourselves and we can cause harm to others, or we can destroy that product. So similarly, the Vedas are given ultimately for a progressive human being, so that our material and spiritual needs are taken care of and that we make spiritual advancement ultimately. That's the whole idea. So we can have a peaceful frame of mind in which we can practice Krishna consciousness. So because the Vedas are very, very vast, Vyasadev divided them into four, and still he was not happy. Because he did not sufficiently glorify Krishna. So we see he also compiled the Vedanta Sutra. So Vedanta Sutra means Veda Anta, the end of all Vedic knowledge. So the Vedanta Sutra contains aphorisms. In other words, codes are given in code language. And the teachings of the Vedas are given in like sutras or codes. So one has to be very, very expert to unlock all of that. And it is a very, very philosophical it is a very, very philosophical book. So most people in this day and age cannot understand Vedanta. And Vedanta talks about the glories of Krishna in an indirect way. So like, for example, it is said that Krishna is nirguna. In other words, Krishna does not have material qualities. Now that does not mean that Krishna does not have spiritual qualities. So just because there is negation of material qualities does not mean that Krishna does not have a form or a personality and a name and activities. So because it's described like that, people, when they read it without any qualification, they misunderstand the Vedanta Sutra or even the Vedas. Obviously sometimes people will read the flowery words of the Vedas, or when people read the Vedas, they get carried away by all these mantras and the yajnas and the pujas, which actually promise one enjoyment in the material world, maybe in this life or in the next life. So in that way they are misled from the true purpose of the Vedas. Or some people get caught up in the philosophical section of the Vedas or the Jnana Yoga. Obviously some get caught up in the yoga aspect. So they think that the goal of the Vedas is, goal of life is actually to do yoga and to acquire mystic siddhis. In that way they miss the whole goal of the Vedas. But because Vyasadeva could foresee this, he divided it into four and the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata contains the Bhagavad Gita. So basically Narad Muni chastised him that he said in one sense all of this, whatever you have described, is actually a waste. It is a place of pilgrimage for crows. Because people will actually get, people will be misled, and they won't understand the purpose of the Vedas, and they won't actually understand Krishna and his glories. So people will get caught up into all of this. So then, therefore he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam under the order of his spiritual master, Narad Muni. And then he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, so we see he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in that way, so now human society has got the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of all the Vedas. So we see that even for us to understand Srimad Bhagavatam is not very, very easy. Though it is considered to be easier than the Vedas. So we see the Srimad Bhagavatam is also quite philosophical, but it has many, many pastimes. So when we read the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees, we directly come in touch with Krishna and we get purified, and we also understand the philosophical concepts through the philosophy. So we see the Bhagavad Gita is like the ABCs, and then there's the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the whole goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is to... Srimad Bhagavatam starts from the point of surrender. Bhagavad Gita ends at surrender, and Srimad Bhagavatam starts from the point of surrender. So we see we are aspiring devotees, and therefore the whole goal is to actually achieve prema, which is love for God. And so we actually start off from the sadhana bhakti stage. So we see there's devotional service in perfection and there's devotional service in practice. So when we perform, because we are aspiring devotees, so we perform devotional service under rules and regulations. So it is described when one takes up the process of, when one begins, and Srila Rupa Goswami, he defines pure devotional service. Anya bilashita shunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam, anukulyena krishnanushilanam. What is it? Anukulyena krishnanushilanam. Shilanam bhaktir uttama. Thank you. So Srila Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service as an activity which is, first it is an activity, it which is free from how does it start? How does this? Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishnanu shivanam bhakti uttama. So devotional service is an activity which is meant for Krishna. So we see that devotional service is not meant for any other living entity. That devotional service is actually meant for Krishna. So when we say devotional service, it's for Krishna. It is not for a boss or a neighbor or someone else. Devotional service is, we see, is actually meant for Krishna. So when we talk about Krishna, so Krishna encompasses his energies, internal, external, and Krishna also means his expansions. So Krishna expands himself into different planetary portions. So from Baladev, Sankarshan, like that, into the Vishnu Tattvas. So that is Krishna. And also, so Krishna means his energies, and his, and also Krishna includes his separated parts and parcels. So when we talk about Krishna, Krishna includes all of this. So, but generally Prabhupada says that when we talk about devotional service to Krishna, it means Krishna and his expansions. And also anything which is related to Krishna. So we see the, for example, the the battlefield of Kurukshetra is given importance because it is related to Krishna, or the paraphernalia of Krishna. So we worship that. Or it is described, one should also, the associates of the Lord. So devotional service has to be performed for Krishna. And of course it has to be done with a favorable intention. So we see that sometimes pure devotional service has to be performed with a favorable intention. We see that sometimes even some demons, they perform activities which are actually pleasing to Krishna, but because they're not done with a favorable intent, that does not count as devotional service. So an example is given of how some demons would fight with Krishna. So that actually gives pleasure to the Lord. But because it is done with an inimical consciousness, that does not count as devotional service. And prime example is Kamsa. Kamsa was 24/7, he was meditating on Krishna. He was when he was sitting, eating, even in his sleep, or he was walking, whatever he was doing, he was thinking of Krishna. So we are also aspiring to think of Krishna all the time, following in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan. But because he was doing in an inimical way, he was thinking of killing Krishna, so therefore that cannot be counted as devotional service. So in other words, it's not done with a favorable intent. So we see when Krishna comes to the material world, because Krishna has all the propensities, he likes to fight. So these demons actually give him pleasure, but because they are not doing with a favorable intent, that cannot be counted as bhakti. But on the other hand, we see like Mother Yashoda, she's actually chastising Krishna, and she's chasing Krishna with a stick. And Krishna is running around, he's actually fearful, he's crying. He's not like putting up a show, but he's really fearful. But because that is done with a favorable intent to please Krishna, her intention is not inimical. It is done out of love for Krishna. Therefore, that is counted as bhakti. That activity is bhakti. So we see also then devotional service has to be performed without any ulterior motive, whether it is for fruitive activities or to speculate or adi means for any other reasons. So pure devotional service is an activity which is performed for Krishna with a favorable intent and without any ulterior motivations. So that is the platform we all are actually aspiring for. So, but because we are in the conditioned state, therefore we perform sadhana bhakti. So, and when we begin to perform devotional service, we actually, in the beginning, we can perceive that we start to, basically, we get freedom from material distress to the degree we are performing devotional service. So it is described that one can be actually fully free from material distress in the stage of nishtha. But before that, to some degree, we actually practically perceive when we come in Krishna consciousness, our troubles actually reduce. You know, before we are in so much anxiety and stress, when we see that actually reduces. So that distress reduces. And one actually, because that distress reduces, it gives you a sense of happiness. But if we don't develop our spiritual emotions, and if we only holding on to that, over a period of time, you know, we will actually forget our distress. So it is described when we come to the process of devotional service, we actually have to aspire to go to higher levels. We should not be static. We should actually aspire to progress more and more. And we have to put our heart into the service we are doing. Then that way Krishna will actually reciprocate with us. As Krishna says, Ye yatha mam prabhatam tam sataiva bhajami aham. So as you surrender unto me, so I will reciprocate, or so I will reward you. So to the degree we reciprocate with Krishna through the service, to that degree Krishna will reciprocate with us. Because we are a spirit soul, we have all these emotions. We are actually seeking emotional fulfillment. Deep down, that's what it is. Whatever activity we are doing, we are actually seeking emotional fulfillment. So, but when we, if we come to Krishna consciousness, initially we will experience freedom from distress to some degree, whether it is physical or mental. But if we don't put our hearts into the service or into the chanting, into all the aspects of devotional service, then we won't get that reciprocation. Then again we will seek for, will again seek for material pleasure. Then we'll again come back to our old ways. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we should try to put our hearts, and that way we will be reciprocated by Krishna. So we see Krishna reciprocates according to the level of the devotee. So we see when Krishna and Balram, they entered the wrestling arena to, when Kamsa invited them, from when Kamsa sent Akrura to get Krishna and Balram for a wrestling match, and then when they killed the elephant Kulayapida, and then they entered the wrestling arena to fight with Chanura and Mushrika, and then the residents of Vrindavan were there, the Mathura Vasis were there, Kamsa was there, everyone was there. So everyone was seeing Krishna in a different way. Krishna was reciprocating with all of them according to their level. So for Kamsa, Krishna was like death personified. And for some, and for Nanda, Yashoda, Devaki, Vasudev, he was like the sun. You know, they had a lot of affection for him. And then for the gopis, he was their lover. So we see in different ways, for different people, Krishna was reciprocating differently, according to their understanding of Krishna. So we see Krishna will also reciprocate with us according to our sincerity in Krishna consciousness. So there will be a certain kind of exchange. So it's 8:30. I'll just stop here. See if any questions or comments or corrections. Yes, Prabhu. We don't do it mechanically. Okay. So the question is, when we're doing so many services, we just tend to do it in the mood that we just want to get over it and we can do the next activity, and we're doing it in a mechanical way or mechanical consciousness. So what I've heard from others, and that one should be in a very prayerful mood to the spiritual master and to the deities, and always pray that we don't get familiar with our service, and pray to put our hearts into that service. So also one should also read Srila Prabhupada's books a lot. So when it's quite common sense. Devotees are quite enthusiastic when they are studying Srila Prabhupada's books, but when devotees are not studying Srila Prabhupada's books, they are actually quite difficult to manage. So when we are actually studying the philosophy and then we try to practice it, we will be actually quite enthusiastic. And also we should always pray to the deities that we can have this mood in which we want to do the service for the pleasure of the Lord, not just to get it done. And also we should try to keep ourselves in very good association where devotees who are actually doing that. So in other words, to surround ourselves with serious devotees who are doing that. In that way, that will rub off on us. That's my realization. Anyone like to add on to that? Chandrasekhar Prabhu? Madhavi? Yes. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.